The name of the book is Give Me Everything You Have on Being Stalked by James Lasden, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This book is harrowing. It is an incredible story of not just the issues of stalking and cyber stalking, but also your very real story of what happened to you. And I'm interested, just as a baseline, of how much you even thought of any of these issues prior to what happened here.
Well, I had certainly never thought about stalking before. I assumed it was something very rare. It didn't particularly interest me. But in the course of this particular experience, all sorts of other issues came up, some of which I had thought about before. And those entered the book as I wrote it, those other subjects that were raised by this experience.
This experience is a young woman who is a student of yours.
She was a student of mine.
A former student,
yeah.
Who then, after she leaves, she comes after you in a myriad of ways. And we can talk about those in a moment, but what fascinated me in reading the book and of what she did is ultimately, and the point I think you're trying to, and you make very well in the book, and I think this is what you're trying to do, is to explore of how easy that is.
Very easy to do, made all the easier by the internet, which was her preferred medium, and very hard to stop.
She's a former student, and she takes to the internet, and it begins how? Her first attack on you is what?
Her first attack was out of the blue. We had been in correspondence. She had been a graduate student of mine and had approached me 2 years after she graduated to ask me to help her edit her novel, which I wasn't able to do, but I put her in touch with my agent, who in turn put her in touch with an editor who worked with her for a bit, and we had an amicable correspondence for a while. At a certain point, it became clear that she was expecting this correspondence to develop into an affair, and I had to lay it out very clearly that I wasn't interested in that. And she seemed to take that okay and went on writing to me. But as time went on, her emails became more and more frequent. They weren't malicious at that point, but they were becoming a little obsessive, and I, at a certain point, stopped answering them. And several months into this, while I was still receiving 10 emails a day sometimes or more, at a certain point, very abruptly, they turned to hate mail. And the first thing that she accused me of was plagiarism, was stealing her work and using it in a story of mine that had been published. And then she went on from there with a series of accusations that just kept escalating and kept changing in their nature. She was very inventive, I suppose is the word.
Certainly is a word, but it is such a wide attack. I mean, it seemed like it was from all fronts, which would give me the indication that it was very well, at some points, thought out.
She said at one point, I was not the only victim of these attacks. The agent I had sent her to and the editor that she worked with also were sent similar hate mails. She wrote to one of those other people that she was emailing that she would ruin me. That was her mission statement, if you like. And she proceeded to try to do that in a very methodical way, and with great sort of what seemed to me like a rational skill. It was not ever very easy to dismiss this as somebody who was just crazy.
There is obviously a difference when someone is writing to you and making an accusation and saying that you have plagiarized their work or accusing you of something that you know very well you didn't do. But then there's that next step of spreading that word and then trying to ruin your reputation, not just going after you, but going after your reputation.
That's right. And that was in many ways the most disturbing thing about it. At a certain point, she began emailing people who were connected with me in one way or another, my employer, my boss where I teach, she'd started posting things online, sending things to people I work with in England, posting things in the comments section of The Guardian, which is a newspaper I review for. And these were very damaging things. These were not just criticisms of my work. These were allegations, the original plagiarism allegation. Then she widened that to say that I and this agent and this editor were part of a Jewish conspiracy to steal her work and sell it to other writers. And then she began accusing me of various kinds of sexual misconduct.
I want to talk about how you address this, not only yourself, but with your colleagues. But looking at just something as simple as writing a comment, a vicious comment, as you mentioned, on Amazon to one of your books, what power did you have, if any, to remove that?
Well, it varied from place to place. In the case of Amazon, they have a report button. I hit that. Nothing much happened. I also sent off emails to every address I could find. And after a while, the review was taken down. And similarly, at The Guardian, there's a report button. But you have to be reading the comments and reporting it.
Right.
I never knew how long things were going to go up for, how long they had been up by the time I saw them. And that was very unpleasant, becoming aware that these things were going up on the internet and that either I was going to have to become as obsessively scrutinizing of the web as she was and continually looking out for this stuff and trying to get rid of it or what. I don't know what the alternative was. It was a bizarre situation that I didn't really know what to do about.
At what point did you make the mental note, the mental calculation that, yes, this person is stalking me?
I became concerned fairly early on when just the quantity of emails grew to such a point that obviously there was something obsessional going on. I don't know that I would have used the word stalking at that point. I think when they turned to that combination of hate mail and deliberate attempts to, as she said, ruin me, to smear my name, to do whatever she could to make me look like some kind of monster. Yeah, at that point, I realized this was stalking. It's cyber stalking. But at a certain point, it turned to threats of actual violence as well against me and my family. And I mean, by then it was pretty clear that's what I was dealing with.
The title of the book is Give Me Everything You Have. There was a note that she sent you that said, give me everything you have and go kill yourself. First of all, give us a sense of where in the process, a timeline of when that particular message came and of where we were in the stalking, and then how you digest something like that.
That probably was 3 or 4 years into this experience. As far as how one digests that kind of thing, it's very difficult. Abuse like that, hatred, expressions of hatred like that shake you up. And I'd had many by then, but they continued to shake me up. And I was in the bizarre position of having to read them because the police had told me that I needed to keep an eye on what she was saying and that if it escalated to overt threats of violence, it would change what she was doing from a misdemeanor to a felony. And at that point, she had moved to California. And at that point, they would possibly be able to extradite her and do something about it. But while it was still in the kind of, I think it was called aggravated harassment, which is a misdemeanor. Well, it was still at that level. There really wasn't very much they could do about it, it seemed.
What was the proximity? Did you know her location and the geography of her at most times?
She wrote that she had moved to California, to L.A. at one point, and I assumed that that was where she was, and I believe that the police have contacted her several times, and I believe she's had visits from the police in L.A., so I think that is where she is, but I have no way of verifying that.
I guess that not knowing is really the scariest part, because it is, by the very nature of it being online, you don't know. They could be 10 miles away and you wouldn't know.
That's true. The not knowing, in my case, it was had more to do, I mean, the frightening part of not knowing had more to do with just not knowing what she was going to do next, who she was going to contact next of the people I knew, what kind of damage she was going to do to me. I was more preoccupied with that than the thought of her actually showing up, although that did trouble me. And towards the end, when she did start making these death threats, it troubled me greatly.
And obviously not just for you, but for your family.
For my family, yeah.
When you get the authorities involved, did you feel that this was something that they had a handle on? I mean, you talked about what it could be classified as, but is there a good system in place of when you come and say, this has happened to me, are we as advanced as the technology that is allowing these things to happen?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I can only speak from my own experience, which was that I did contact the police, and they wanted to help. They read the emails, and they were very shocked by them. And it also wasn't just me; it was these two other people who happened to be women in their one in her 60s and one in her 70s, who were, you know, vulnerable people and very upset by this or very disturbed by it. And the police wanted to help, but they ran up against this classification problem of it being initially a misdemeanor rather than a felony. And there simply wasn't very much they could do. They called her. They visited her. She was sent cease and desist letters by lawyers. There really didn't seem to be very much that could be done. And I don't know if that means there's something wrong with the system or if that's just the way it has to be. People on both sides of the law need the protections of the law, I guess. It's probably right that you can't just have somebody arrested without meeting certain criteria. But I have to say, I felt very, very powerless in this situation and I couldn't really understand why it couldn't be brought to a more straightforward end.
There wasn't a straightforward end.
There isn't a straightforward end. I mean, the police told me that if she were in New York, she would be picked up immediately and arrested, but she isn't. At one point, since writing the book, she actually used the word murder in connection with me, a threat to come to New York and murder me. By that time, the case had been taken up by a detective at the hate crimes unit of the NYPD, which is where it is now, but he's up against the same situation. Only with this word murder, I'm sorry, this sounds so melodramatic. It's hard for me still to believe that this has been going on in my life for the last 5 or 6 years. But anyway, with that, he felt that perhaps an extradition would be possible. Then he put it to us that what this would involve would be that they would bring her to New York. She would be brought in front of a judge. A date would be set for her trial, and she would be turned loose in the streets of New York. And I wanted it to happen. I felt that it was an important thing to do regardless. But there are other people involved, and they didn't want her brought to New York and let loose on the streets after having made death threats against them. And I had to respect that. And so it's sort of at an impasse at the moment.
You can't help but think, I mean, in reading the book, I was thinking that obviously there is a cry for attention here. And I would think you had to think, and you addressed this, but of thinking long and hard about writing about it, of what that would do to exacerbate the problem, certainly. And it is very important, I think, to share your story. But as it went on, I thought, well, you know, there must be a resolution. And then when you realize there isn't, you think, oh, my God, you know, and then you wonder, well, is this scratching the bite?
Yeah, I mean, of course, those are questions that arose, and they're very hard to answer because I don't know. But my feeling is that when somebody has made threats against you and your family, there's not. I mean, how can you exacerbate a situation like that? That's what they've already said they were going to do. So it doesn't seem at that point worth cowering in silence any longer. But, you know, while I was writing the book, one of the main reasons I started writing the book because I felt I needed to write a document that simply laid out what was going on in my life, so that the next time an employer took me aside and said, James, we've had a very strange email about you, I would be able to say, well, look, this is the story. Go to my website and you can read. But I didn't write that document. But in the process of trying to write it, I became interested in other aspects of the situation and ways in which it touched on other aspects of my own life, my experience as a writer. And just sitting down and writing that was the first way that I began to get any kind of ability to put myself at a distance from what was going on. I mean, I was writing it in the thick of it, and I was in extreme discomfort. And just the act of writing about it was somewhat helpful in that regard. But that's different from publishing it. And all the time when I was writing it, I wasn't sure that this was something that I would want to publish. And even when I had it accepted by my publisher, the question you asked was on my mind, well, what is the effect of this going to be? And for periods, she goes quiet. She cycles out of whatever the obsession is. And that happened soon after I turned it in. And I thought, as the weeks went by, well, why am I stirring up this hornet's nest again? And then it started up again, and it was more violent than ever before. And at that point, I thought, well, I'm going to go forward with this.
In going forward, you obviously look at, it brings up the discussion, the very discussion that we're having about this issue. And you have to think, I mean, obviously, you can't read this book without feeling incredibly sorry for you and what happened and feel your pain. But I'll admit, I also came out thinking, well, okay, but this also 6 years with a woman who obviously has a great mental issue that should in some way be addressed, and we don't have a system for that either.
Apparently not. But let me just say, this is not in any way an attack on her, and nor is it an attempt to solicit sympathy for myself. I mean, I in order to write about the ordeal, I had to get the ordeal on the page.
Right.
But I'm not trying to enlist people's pity or sympathy in any way.
Well, no, but it's hard not to read those things as, you know, and them not being true and thinking, okay, you know, and not feeling like, God, I'm glad I'm not him, you know?
Right. I would think it would be.
Yeah. But
what I'm trying to say is that what interested me partly in writing the book was to try to understand the situation from her point of view, try to understand to what degree I was implicated in bringing it on to myself, and to continually expand that process of examination through different sets of perspectives, literary perspectives, myth, and to a very limited extent, this perspective of mental illness. I say to a limited extent because I don't know much about that and I'm not qualified to comment on it. And I didn't feel that I could just become an amateur psychiatrist, you know, to any useful degree in the book. But I guess one would have to say, by its very nature, there has to, you know, that this suggests some kind of mental imbalance.
Given that this came out of a relationship that you have, the student-professor relationship, does that change the relationship that you have with students at all? Does it make you more wary or at very least conscious?
The experience has changed me in so many ways. It has had a somewhat darkening effect on that particular relationship, in the sense that I try not to be wary or guarded, but it's just a little bit of a reflex now. But I think it's very rare to encounter somebody like this. I mean, it's rare. It's actually less rare than I thought. One of the things that has surprised me since I published the book and started talking to people about it is how many people have had some kind of stalking experience. I think any time I've told a story to a group of more than two or three people, there's always somebody who's had something similar. I haven't met anyone who's had one that has been so on this scale, that has gone on for years rather than weeks or months, and has been so calculatedly malicious. But I've heard many more stories than I would have expected to hear.
Do you know what she wants? There's nothing really that comes out that you could do to stop this.
It's very mysterious, and a lot of the book is an attempt to grapple with that mystery of, well, what does she want? And I don't know the answer. I find it very difficult to believe that she seriously believes any of the allegations that she's making. Early on, she, to my great surprise, came out with this violently anti-Semitic stuff. I had never seen any sign of that in her before. It astonished me. I found it very hard to believe that she really thinks those things. But she became very attached to that rhetoric. I don't know what she was trying to get at with that. Once she began, it began as a sort of very personal thing, and then she widened it to holding me responsible for all the problems in the Middle East and all the rest of it. So I have to think, well, supposing I were to say, yes, I'm guilty for everything you accuse me of, would that make you feel better? I don't think it would. And I don't know what would. One of the things that occurred to me while I was writing was that I hadn't considered before, was the impact of my own silence on her. And I think that probably that was something that was much more upsetting to her than I had realized. And when I go back over the situation in my mind, I think, well, should I have kept up the correspondence? Should I have written more to her? And I can't honestly say that I think I should. I don't think it would have made any difference. Nevertheless, I do think that my silence was a part of it.
For your colleagues and for those in the academic and publishing worlds that you work in, was there a level of understanding, or did you really feel effects of what she was trying to achieve?
I felt understanding from just about everybody who I talked to about it. But when somebody's conducting an internet campaign against you, it's what you don't hear about, it's what you don't know about that's sort of disturbing.
Right.
You don't hear about the people who've decided not to commission a review from you, or not to hire you for a job, or not to approach you for one reason or another because they've seen some extremely unpleasant thing about you on the internet, and they're thinking, oh, well, you know, there are plenty of other writers, I don't need this trouble. So it's those things that are just impossible to calculate.
But you don't feel, because the book was published, you're working, that it didn't have an overly negative effect on
I don't that. Think it had an overly negative effect on my career. And that's not really the subject of the book. I mean, I felt threatened, and I felt I needed to do something for professional reasons. I needed to do, I absolutely had to do something to tackle it. But the real damage to me was just the experience of it, was the emotional and psychological damage of it. And in particular, after a while, it became very hard for me to think about anything else. There was this person out there doing everything she could to harm me. And you become very concerned when something like that happens. And you would just spent an increasing amount of time wondering, well, what's going on? What's going to happen next? And not being able to think about the things you want to think about, having your thoughts captive to somebody else's, in this case, malign will, is incredibly unpleasant.
Can you do that by yourself, or is therapy necessary in something like that?
To overcome that?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't go into therapy, and I'm not sure if it would have helped me, because this was not something that was coming from inside my head. This was something that was actually going on and had its source in observable reality. So I don't know if...
But it's a life-altering experience, and it seems that in talking to you, and just because the book is out, that you have entered another room. You have come through one phase of this. And yes, it's still going on, and you don't know what may be in the next room, but that you have reached if not an understanding, at least an acceptance of what occurred. And I'm curious as to, doing that all by yourself seems like quite a tall order. Because there is a trauma, I would think.
It's a story of a trauma. In fact, my original subtitle for the book was not going to be On Being Stalked. It was going to be Notes on a Crisis. Because in a way, this to me is a book about going through a crisis and coming through a crisis at the other end. And it wasn't therapy that got me through it. It was talking to people, talking to my wife especially, mm-hmm. and writing about it. And this is the record of that.
When you put something like this out, a book, and you tell the story, and you now have this record, what do you hope the conversation turns to? I mean, obviously not just your story, but what can we learn, and what can we do, do you think, to meditate on this issue and try to prevent it societally?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not sure if I know the answer to it. I think just by putting the story out there with all the ramifications of it, I think it is quite provoking. I think people are interested in it. It touches on a lot of contemporary issues like the internet and, you know, cyberbullying, cyberstalking, mental illness, and I'm not a sociologist. I wasn't approaching it from the point of view of trying to jump into those kinds of conversations. But I feel that it has bearing on those conversations, and I hope that the people whose life and work is about making those kinds of societal changes will be interested in it.
The name of the book is Give Me Everything You Have, On Being Stalked. It is published by FSG. James Lasden will be at the Golden Notebook on the 16th of February in Woodstock, New York at 4 o'clock for an event. It is at the Golden Notebook, 4 o'clock on the 16th of February in Woodstock, New York. And you can find out more information by going to goldennotebook.com. Goldennotebook.com. Again, the name of the book is Give Me Everything You Have. It's published by FSG. James Lasden, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Thoughts are with you. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.